NPA. The Hawks. SAPS, that is at African Police Service. Justice. GCIS, that is communication. And above all, NICOC. These are the entities.
What is NICOC?
Those who are coordinating within the state security. NICOC, coordinating.
All right, okay. Yes, so you now know who, yeah?
Of all, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Of these 12, should I say, compliments, your task team, how many of them do attend meetings frequently? You see, General, the problem with SCOPA is that we all do our homeworks very clearly, and we are good listeners. When you come next year and you give us a different answer, we're going to hit hard on you. And it's so defending your colleagues, it's not going to help us at all. It's not helping the people who have put us in power to make sure that we come here and ask questions. So of all these 12 entities that you have, or should I say departments that you have talked about, how many of them attend your meetings often? Is it really a month on monthly meeting basis, or maybe at one stage you just call them ad hoc?
Before Honorable Chair, I answer the question. There's also a Department of Monitoring and Evaluation. That is also the key. From the president,
it is the key.
Is the key,
and because the key is not here.
Key is not here. I don't know the reason.
Right, and the chairperson does not know the reason why they are not here. All right, and when I count, I'll come to you, Comrade Vincent. DPSA, monitoring and evaluation, NICOC, FICA, GCIS, Justice, they are not here. So meaning that the majority of your components are not here. And then your monthly meetings, do you have like standing dates, a calendar made for the whole year so people know the dates and time, or is it any day of the month?
There's a standing, Honorable Chair,
all right.
A calendar.
Okay.
But if that on that day there are some other unforeseen commitment, there will be a communication that will be given to all the entities.
That's fine. No, that's fine. That's all right. Congratulations.
Thanks. Thank you very much, Chair. I thought you were assisting us, Chair, when you try to capture it in the beginning. I think General and colleagues, when we started, we said that the objective of all of us is to eradicate and deal with corruption and financial abuse. That's what we said. And I'm looking at your mandate on page 6. You say the ACTT is mandated by sub-outcome 7 to ensure that corruption in public and private sector is reduced by building resilient anti-corruption systems. And that is why the Chair was asking you about your attendance and so on, because that talks to the systems. It goes further and investigate cases of alleged corruption with the view of prosecution. That talks to the implementation of those systems of yours. And that's the chairperson I was asking. How often do you meet And more importantly, what is the content of your meeting? Because from where I'm sitting, the content of the meeting should be that people come and say, and let me give you an example. Health would come and say, the DG of health, or whoever is the representative, would come and say, in our case, in this financial year or this month, we have picked up Vincent Smith having done A, B, C, D. Hamban, go and prosecute him. That's what it should be doing. So could you guys explain to us how often you meet? Because if you don't meet and the kid is not there, DPSA and those, if those are not there, it then begs the question, when you meet, what do you talk about? What do you talk about when you meet? Because I would assume that this anti-corruption unit must get input from government departments and decide how you're going to prosecute them, as you would do in the SIU. You would get input from somebody saying, please take this and go and process it. Now, if you don't meet, or if DPSA is not there, monitoring is not there, what are you discussing when you get there? Where do you get that information from? Because I get the sense personally, Chair, that they get information from whistleblowers. And I would have thought that the obvious first port would be the accounting office of the department, because that's what they say to us, General. When they come to SCOPA, and that is why at some point we're going to give you specifics, and say to you on this day, DG Vincent said he gave this thing to you. What have you done with it? Because, Chair, the difficulty that we have is that we have all the specifics, that says, this department said, we can't proceed with this matter because we've handed it over to the law enforcement agency. And we would then assume that the law enforcement agency will take that information, process it, and get to the second part of your mandate with a view to prosecute, convict, and incarcerate. Because that is your mandate. Now, General, if you come here and you don't even know who comes to your meeting, then it begs the question, when they get there or those that don't get there, what is it that you are discussing? Because Parliament deals on the basis of audited financial statements that are signed by the accounting officer, as Commissioner Moyani would tell you. They're the ultimate people. So, Chair, I would want to suggest that regardless of how we take this thing forward, at some point they must go and rethink their methodology. And my proposal would be that we need to find a way that our content is a direct report from departments. And therefore, if those departments don't attend and don't send it to you, or the lead departments are not even active, then it renders your unit useless. Because where are you getting your information from? I think that is the point. That's why I thought you were helping us, Jay. So if they came back and said to us, no, you know what, indeed this is how we should go and not restructure but go and rethink our method of work, it would assist us. But if they want us to get into specifics, I sing again. We can go and say, this, tell us what has happened. But I think that won't be fair. But just give us a sense of how does this unit work? As the convener, how does this unit work? Where do you get your information? How often do you meet? And what is the content of your meeting? Because ultimately, we want you to prosecute and incarcerate those that have broken the law. Ultimately, that's how you're going to be measured in terms of your success. Thanks, Chair.
All right. Okay. Can we respond to that? I think how often you meet is once every month. Do you have a standing agenda, or the agenda depends on the issues as they come? If you have a standing agenda, what is the agenda like? Yeah, I'll definitely give you the opportunity.
I just wanted to add budget.
On budget?
Because budget relates to all of this. What sort of budget has been set aside for ACT? So we can see whether we're getting bang for our buck. And it ties into what but what the Honourable Smith was talking about in terms of...
I don't want to add, because then you add. And yet, I want us to go back to our old way, where there is a question and it is responded to. Otherwise, if we have many questions... Okay, no, that's fine. You are noted. Yes, General?
Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, I want just to explain the issue of a budget for the ACTT, Honourable Chair. There's no budget for the ACTT. Each department is using its own budget.
Its own budget, okay. No, yes. That's fine.
Yes. All right. It's just a combination of department, and each department will be using its own budget.
No, that's okay. And then your agenda?
Agenda?
Just switch on your mic.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Honourable. Yeah. There is a standing agenda in terms of the procedure of the meeting.
No. The content of that standing agenda. Yes, opening, welcome, and then... Because then that tells us what is it that you are discussing every time you meet. You see, that to what extent do we think it is aligned to our expectations here?
That one, luckily, Honourable Chair, we're having the secretary, so that it must come from her.
Okay, that's fine. Where is the secretary?
Brigadier. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I'm the secretary of the ACTT. Yes, we've got a standing agenda. We've got, we'll be having welcoming and opening, and then we'll be discussing, we've got operational issues that we discuss, and we've got legal issues that we look at, and how we deal with cases. And each and every department, will be presenting, like for instance, GCIS will be presenting to us how do they communicate issues of corruption, and then SSA will be sort of presenting to us what is the threat with regard to the trends that they have picked up regarding corruption. And our status on cases and et cetera with regard to program 5.
On a point of order, Chairperson. You see, if you don't manage Mrs. Chiba properly, we'd have to focus to her, because we were told that there's a secretary, and that secretary is supposed to be talking. Now she's talking on behalf of the secretary, and she's coming right from back. Just ask her to be patient, and she must not behave in this way that makes us to feel that she's beginning to undermine us.
Okay. The NPA is the co-chair of the ACTT.
It's always important to tell us, Chair, so that you know how this thing is operating.
All right.
Because if it's like this, it gives us a wrong impression.
Okay. All right. That's fine. All right. I want us to pass the agenda. I'll go to Mente. And then I'll come back to you.
Okay, Pe. Chair, I just have two things. One, the designation of people that are representing different units. What position or portfolio from their units are you opting for, like a DG, a DDG? Reason for that, we as COPA, we need accountability. And usually we ask the DG. So we want to know, DG, in the ACT, you are represented by a DDG of finance or of human resource. Why then were they not available to attend the meeting of today and all those things? So I need a designation of representative from different components. Then number two, Comrade Nyame would say, imali abantu le ayo mali yethu. I see kuku slide 8 when your presentation is in. Kuko I potential recoveries zemali of 747 million. And none of the departments has ever reported what we have recovered so much money from Smangmang.
Is that the ACTT report?
The SIU one.
SIU one.
The SIU one.
Which page?
Page 8. There's a potential recovery. And that potential recovery speaks directly to DPSA because DPSA has to identify a person within a department that must go and make sure that that particular transgressor is paying back the money of the state. Because this is the public purse, it's not anyone's purse. Now, when they are not here and DPME is also not here, we have no one to tell us how much has been recovered, from who, and what has happened to that particular person. The importance of everyone, especially the key ones, to be available here with you today. Thanks.
All right, can we respond to that?
Honorable Chair and honorable members, I'll start about the people who are supposed to attend the ACTT. In terms of the document that is dealing with the committees, that is dealing as to how meeting must be conducted, is talking about DGs, is talking about DDGs. But specifically, because DDGs, they are always busy, is DDGs. But it's not always. You'll see reps. You'll see reps that are representing the government departments. And I must say it that as a chairperson of the ACTT, I don't have control over the department unless the parliament can give me that authority to be chief whip of those departments. Because even now, Honorable Chair, they are not here. I never receive any phone except the NPA Advocate Sean. And Advocate Chiba is here. Because it's what is happening. If I'm not going to be available as a chairperson, my deputy is chairing together with the NPA. It's how things. We would like to answer all the questions. But some of the issues like those that are affecting the accounting officers, I will be just running short to answer those ones. Because these are the DGs. And my counterpart, the DGs, some of them, they don't attend. You said, Honorable Chair, in this house, we need to speak the truth. Yes. Very few DGs are attending this structure. Remember, I took over when I was 18 in 2014. I saw Kenny and Joe Retter from the president. These are the people who are always there. I'm talking of DDGs. I don't know whether I'm pronouncing it right. Because myself, I'm a general. Honorable Chair. Thanks, Honorable Chair.
All right. Comrade, a follow-up, okay?
Chair. Yeah. I think, Chair, it's now safe to say, if it's a DG or a DGG, it's safe to say the DPME doesn't want to come here. DDGs in DPME, they are not less than 4. And if they are at the DPSA, DPME and Statistics Committee right now, not 5 of them with the DG are there. So it's safe to say they are undermining this committee.
Okay. Let me give Chilwan and then I'll come to you. I wonder, so, because we're trying to clear the woods so that when we get into the substance, we have a proper and full context, since this is our first engagement. I think just appreciate that from our side. General, before Comrade Chilwan.
Honorable Chair, I want to say I'm so happy together with the delegation I'm with today appearing before this Honorable House, because when I was making research, it's a first of its kind. It's where now I'll ask, because this is the first meeting, even the pro forma of how we're supposed to report, according to me, the letter I received from this House, I complied with the letter. But when now I'm dealing with the presentation here as a chair of this structure, I could see that I'm lacking somewhere. Hence now, I'm promising that when you call us, you're going to see things. But now, we are now swimming now, because this side, the Honorable will be asking a question. When we try, the Honorable is asking another question. And now, there is no pro forma. Now, we are graduating now as this structure. Because we, under my leadership, it's the first time the ACTT appear before you, Honorable Chair. So I think the people of South Africa will understand we are going to a good direction now.
All right. Okay. No, that's fine. We are like the police when they are interrogating a suspect. Comrade Chulwane, and
yeah.
Then Hlengwa. I want us to get
yeah.
and
we're getting loose now, Chairperson.
Mm.
Yeah,
it's
no,
really
no.
Bad.
Yeah, I would want really that take it easy and talk to us. Where there are challenges and shortcomings, open up to us so that we can say how do we assist. Yes, comrade.
Thank you, Chairperson. General, I think you've just beat me in my mouth what I wanted to say, because generally in this committee, we ask question, and according to your answer, that's where we coming more and more and more until we are satisfied. So that is the culture of this committee. That's how we operate. But General, you spoke about the DP. No. The department. Yeah. You spoke about that department. That is the key. So the key is not here today. But what I wanted to check, to establish with you, is that when you have these meetings, who do you report to? And do you report quarterly or each and every after meetings? Yeah, I just wanted to get a clarity on that one.
All
so right. That we will always make a follow-up if after your answer. Yeah.
All right.
So keep going.
From the ACTT, we report to the JCPS. And from there, from the JCPS...
What is JCPS? Now I'm asking the general, and if comrades just say justice and stop there, I mean, you're not being helpful. No, please. What is JC? Yeah.
I'm now scared to talk because when I spoke, I was then.
No, so I'm not so sure. No,
that's my privilege. You can't take my way. Yes, please. There's a chairperson who chairs the meeting, but as a member of parliament, it's my way. It's within my.
Please. Yes, Advocate.
This is a justice and crime prevention and security cluster.
Okay.
It consists of the DGs of the security cluster. Thank you, Chairperson.
All right. So that's where they report. Now, how often? Monthly, after every meeting, quarterly, per semester, once a year?
It's monthly, Honorable Chair.
All right.
Yeah, it's a Tuesday. It's a first Tuesday of the month. Unless there's something.
All right. No, that's fine.
And from there, to answer the Honorable, from the JCPS, we report to the interministerial committee.
Within that same cluster?
Yes, that is quarterly.
Okay. Quarterly.
Quarterly.
Okay.
That is chaired by Minister Jeff Hardeb from the President's.
Okay. No, that's fine.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think on that note, maybe we know as a committee where do we go,
all
probably,
right.
So that when we go for our next meeting,
yeah.
When we want answers, we'll still have to go straight through to the monitoring and evaluation.
Okay.
I just wanted to establish
all
that,
right.
Because it looks like, so it means even the budget comes from the monitoring evaluation or...
Yeah, no. Each department uses its own budget.
Okay.
Sengwa?
Thanks.
No, thank you, Chair. In addition now to seeking the register of attendance, can we actually get this agenda? Because I'm not confident that we've gotten it solidly of what it is, this standard agenda. What it is.
All right.
But, Chair, here's my concern. Because I get a sense that attendance is willy-nilly, flippant, and very ad hoc. And I want to raise this in this context. This week, this month, Hleng was here as the DG, I assume. Next month, Hleng was not there. His DDG, Brother Seth, is there. I don't get a sense of continuity and effectiveness so that we can be able to do a constructive reflection on where we were last month to where we were this month. So that's why, Chair, I'm zooming on to this thing. Can we actually get, if DPME said, right, Hlengwa, you are on ACTT, let us get that. Let's put a face to a department, because we're speaking in general terms. Uguti, it's DPME, it's SARS, it's VICCA. Let's put a face, Uguti, so that we can hold that individual accountable. They obstruct the effectiveness and efficiency of the structure. But here's the final request that I have, maybe the general to assist me. In the reporting that he has outlined, has he reported this challenge of attendance, and what has been the response from those which he reports to? On the monthly basis and the quarterly basis, because if it has not been reported, then the ACTT has been aiding and abetting this kind of unprofessional conduct, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, let's get a response to that question.
On that one, Honourable Chair, I think now I'm happy that the Honourable House is asking for the evidence. In terms of the agenda, in terms of the minutes, because it will be seen there that Department A or B is not attending, and will be writing a letter to that DG to say there was a meeting and your representative from your department is not attending. And after, you'll see them attending.
All right, but Lengwa's question is, up to now, unless if you'll say we're just allowed it to flow, have you ever, as the co-chairs, the Hawks and NPA, ever reported, when you give your monthly reports, a challenge of this continuous change of individuals from departments? Or it has you have just lived with it, just like that? Or it is only being seen as a challenge by us now? You had not spoken to it before.
To be honest, Chair, ever since I started there, the attendance has never really been the attendance of DGs per se. It's always been the attendance, you chief directors, and to some extent DDGs, but what does happen, we treat it casually. It's not like we would then, because we're happy to see that there's a representative from a particular department.
It's more of a minimalist approach. At least there is a warm body.
It is not a warm body. So you find people that are sent actually to attend the meetings are people who are the core, who are dealing with these particular matters that we then need to attend to. So it's not like there's a change of faces. It's the usual people that have always been attending the meetings, that continue to attend, but it's never really been the senior people at the DGs that then attend the meeting.
Alright.
No,
that's fine. I want us to pass this phase and then go to the issues that were raised earlier on. Comrade Boy and Comrade Kuno, and then we then move on to the substance.
Yeah, no. Kekana, we won't be told by you only. We have got responsibility here. Don't do that. Leave us to take our responsibility.
Yeah, no. Let's
No.
Talk to the
No. Please. You see, because it talks to the quality of information provided. You see, if you talk you take Auditor General very serious, who provides us with time and again with a lot of information, and what departments are doing in their own conduct, and what is the expectation of the public, we sit with this problem. You see, because when you were coming here as the anti-corruption unit, we thought that finally South Africans will be happy that they are attending to the matter itself. I mean, the type of responsibility that we have been provided by the Constitution is quite serious, you see. And the value is about the South African life. And in general, you hear from other people or right across the world that corruption can bring a country down, you see. Now, this is shocking. When a whole team of people and officials in government, and even those that they are reporting to, doesn't take this issue very serious. You see that thing? It puts us under pressure. That's why I had the question that how much are we spending? Look at the contingency. But we must now be able to explain to the broad public that a size of these people, how much did it cost them to come to Cape Town and be able to give us a report? Now we are just at the initial stage, struggling to get the participants. And if all of us are reading the PFMA correctly, it talks about accounting officers. Now, if accounting officers who spend most of their time overseas, flying around, and never be in meetings, it leaves us with a sour note that who is taking us then serious? That's the problem, Chairperson. Who is taking us serious? But when the SCOPA calls for this auditor general or for these DGs, it's the same type of argument that we get here, you see, that people would send their underlings and some other people that we don't understand. That's why we're very clear and we push that director generals must come, because the PFMA, if you take the law very serious, these are people dealing with the rule of law. If you take them very serious, they're supposed to take this work very serious. Now they are ignoring, but the priority is to fly around. You see that thing? The priority is to fly around and be able to go. I don't even understand what they do, because at the end of the day, poverty and unemployment is not being fought. We don't get the necessary results of what we are expecting from our own officials. And this is the problem. Wouldn't have been having you in front of us if ever the director generals were able to give us how they solve the problems. Because I'll tell you popularly in this committee, the Honorable Kuno will always say, we've been in the 22 years that we've been in government, what are the consequences of when you have messed up in a particular department? And then you get to a situation where that people they themselves start shifting each other. But now we thought that with a cluster of this nature, you'll be able to tell us how many have arrested and what is going on. Now we can't get to that substance because we're stuck around one accord that it seems as if this work is not being treated in a very serious way. And that is the problem that I'm having as I'm sitting here, that what do we say to the public and what do we say to everybody, that even the investors that want to invest into South Africa. This is a point of concern to them, that how much do we take them serious if we can't even take our own people very serious? And this is where my problem is. Yes.
Okay. All right. Let me take Comrade Kuno, and then you can respond collectively, and then we can then go to the starting point. Yes, Comrade.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. On a serious note, when you look at your mandate, I think your mandate is clear. And at first, I was starting to begin that you don't really have teeth to bite. But your mandate says a lot. It says you actually have the but you know, Chairperson, the problem that I see, which has been a problem for a long time, it's communication from one department to the other. I think you have a mandate that is clear, and it's for a good cause for the country. But the problem is explaining your mandate to your colleagues. I think that's where the problem is. And, you know, now the other question is that exactly after you have reported to JCPS, and then you now what do they really report to the interministerial committee? If you do not have accounting officers coming to your meetings, you are as good as wasting time or meeting, you know, as a society of some sort. And after that, you have drinks and that's it. And I have a problem when you do not have a budget. When you don't have a budget, because that's when you'll find somebody not attending a meeting, and they will tell you, according to the to my department, I do not have this kind of budget for me to fly to Cape Town or wherever you are meeting, so that we can have that meeting. So that's where the first problem. You cannot have a mammoth task like this, and you do not have a budget that you talk to. That is why you'll find that in 1.38 billion that you are trying to investigate, you can only recover 3 million rands. It's because of all these things. I think it's all problems coming together. And if you were taking yourself seriously as an entity, or as I don't know how to summarize your ACTT, if you were taking your structure very seriously, I think our departments will take you seriously, and we can actually feel you that you are beginning to do what you are tasked to do by the people out there, Chairperson. Thanks.
All right. No, that's fine. I want us to get back to the substantive issues, but I think what all this was saying was give us a feel and a sense that this very, very important task that you are faced with is being taken seriously. Firstly, by yourselves, and secondly, by those who are your seniors. I think that's where we need to start. Get that sense that we all are serious. It's not just empty rhetoric. We just talk about it because it looks good to, you know, to talk against corruption and all that kind of stuff. So that even when we say, how do we work with you, we know that there's a value add from the work that you do. You know, we can also take up issues and throw them your side. We know there's something that is going to happen. Right, let's go back where we started. And I think the first question was around public entities. The figures that you have given us are only all about departments. Why are we not, is it, and yet generally you hear SOEs are in chaos and in the news for all the wrong reasons. They're like the milking cows, but all you have given us is about departments. I'm not even touching the private sector, which of course thrives on corruption, but there's nothing.
Thanks, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. We met, and now I will hand over to General Khanna for this question.
Honorable Chair, let me first, and Honorable Members, let me first apologize for the omittance of this. The fact is that we are dealing with cases involving SOEs, but for this purpose, we were under the assumption, and the wrong assumption, that we must focus on government departments. there are matters where we are dealing with of PRASA, ESCOM, DENEL, and I mean all the list is endless.
No. Look, the first paragraph of my letter says government department stroke entities. So it's fine, you had that impression, but it's not because we're not clear. Continue.
No, thanks, Jen.
Sure.
No, that's why I said it's our, we all apologize right. for
okay.
that.
All right.
It's our methods.
It's fine, it's all right. So how and when then do we get that information? Because then that will give us a complete picture. Because what you have given us is maybe a quarter or half the picture.
By next week, Honorable.
Can we say by next week, Wednesday, this information will be on our table?
Wednesday.
Next week, Wednesday. All right. Okay. That's fine. So that one is sorted out, comrades. We'll have that information, we'll have a look at it, and we'll take it up from. Yes.
Okay. Will that be a detailed description of every single investigation that's going on and where we are on it? Because some of these investigations that you referred to, Mr. Khan, are very, very relevant right now. So will it just be a list of what you're investigating or telling us per one what's going on? I think the committee needs that.
Honourable Chair, we can give the list and the current status of all cases, but not the detailed information, because some of them are currently in investigation, of which it is sensitive at this stage.
I think what we'll need, those that have already been, I think what we'll need, it's for you to be able to tell us from this entity, this is what we're investigating, this is what is involved, these are the amounts that are involved, this is where we are with the investigation, without necessarily saying it is Hlengwa who is accused of ABCD. I don't think we'd want to.
And can we just add to that list, who in this cluster is dealing with it? Is it SIU, is it Hawks, which entity, which investigating unit is actually currently dealing with it? That would be helpful too. So, is it SAPS, Hawks, SIU, you know, per one? Thank you.
That's fine, sir.
Yeah, but this question requires an answer now. Can you tell us, is it the Hawks that are investigating? Is it the SIU, or some are split between the Hawks and the SIU?
The issues of the Hawks, Honorable Chair, is dealt between commercial crime and serious organized crime and serious corruption. We will give that breakdown as to where the case is.
Okay. All right. Great. Yeah?
You remember earlier on, Chairperson, his report, yeah, General, he said there were cases that were already completed. And there are ones that are already prosecuted. We want to know their status as well, if they can. I mean, because I know and understand that everything has been investigated, so there's nothing to fear. It can be given to the public. So if they can also include that in their report.
Yeah, it's we have agreed the reporting is going to be detailed. One details. That's why I said, except to give us the names of individuals, but want to know in this department or in this entity.
Chairperson, just to assist you, we just thought this one on the completed, that one should be for the public confirmation. There's no need for, because there's no any investigation that's going on. Then the case has been concluded, then the public should know that Chilwane has been serving a sentence for the crime committed. I just thought.
All right.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. That's a very normal request from our side when people appear before us.
That is Honorable Chair, where somebody has been convicted. We must be detailed.
Yeah. We want. Yes, comrade.
I wanted to add to the person by saying that where there are sensitivities, talk to our chairperson. Because if you don't talk to him, we tend not to understand what you mean. But I'll tell you quite frankly, if you deal with the PRASA issues, we know what is exactly happening and the extensiveness of the problem. But talk to our chairperson so that our chairperson can be able to guide the meeting on the nature of information that he has and be able to give us direction when some of these questions are arising, you see. But I'm telling you, General, that after this, the Auditor General is going to come back again with a full report of what is going on within departments. We want to do a comparison with the work that they are doing and with what we are hearing from him. Because the way we take every institution serious, it was when the Auditor General reports, he clearly says that he doesn't get support, you see. All of us as institutions, he puts the blame upon us. And more than that, he pointed bluntly to us as COPPA that all the reports I've made, they are compiled, they are very thick, I've done auditing, forensic auditing, but I don't see the country taking my issues very serious. That's where we are today. And he's being fair and being honest, if you even listen to the ATCC in how we conduct itself, you see. So it's important that we could be able to compare the notes and compare the type of cases. And when DGs are coming here, this is what Honorable Vincent was saying, that they then say they themselves, no, we have reported to law enforcement agencies. And we're having law enforcement agencies today, you see. That's an indictment that comes that then somebody's not taking the work itself seriously.
Right.
That's all we want to get to the bottom of the problem itself.
Okay.
So that we know what we're calling. We can't report to Parliament about what we don't even know, you see.
All
and
right.
That's the question we want to deal with. Is.
All right. Yeah. All right, let's go to the second question.
Honorable Chair, just to answer on the second one, I think we just need to clarify one thing. When we stated the issue of the 10 billion, it was not meant as an achievable, but rather the cumulative value of the cases put together amounted to 10 billion rand. And I think maybe the question is couched in a sense as if it was an achievable. Maybe just to clear that area.
So the achievable is actually possibly less, much less than the 10 billion. All right. Okay, let's go to the next question then. Because I don't know how you wrote them. I thought the second question was the breakdown on the role of each component in the ACTT. But respond to them as you have them there. If there's anything that is outstanding, I'll be able to guide.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Without delaying the committee, I just want to go back a little bit in terms of the coordination. I don't want to leave the committee, this committee, in an uneasy situation. The strategic meeting that he is speaking about is a strategic meeting that consists of everybody, all the members. And then there's an operational meeting which is focused on case by case. So the operational meeting meets per week, it meets after 2 weeks. So it's really an operational meeting that will then say, we have these cases, they've been on the roll. What is the actual problem with regard to these cases, and how can we begin to assess? And if we see that the problem is that the investigations that are outstanding are investigations wherein we ought to be assisted by SARS, then we invite SARS to come on board. So I don't want the committee then to think that we only meet once a month, essentially. That is a standing meeting, but then there are operational teams.
So it depends where the case is. If the case is a case that emanates from the Western Cape, we'll then have a regional head of the Western Cape from the NPA coming to that particular meeting. So that is how we then operate. Okay.
No, that's fine.
For me, then, that it adds to a level of confusion, because you know what has happened. We get one response, and then like as an afterthought, to then say no, let's clarify that further. In fact, it's not what we said. We asked, how many times do you meet? We meet once a month. Can we be clarified? Honestly speaking, can the answers just be forthright? Because now there's meetings of no withdrawing, we're calling a regional somebody there, right? Who are these strategic people? I still maintain, Chair, we must put a face to a department or an entity or institution represented here. Now you've got two sections, now there's two sets of meetings. Chair, so that we can be able to understand and assist where there are shortcomings. Earlier on, there was a shortcoming which was with President. No, there's a problem with shortage of prosecutors, right? We are going to be expected to be constructive about that. But if we're not going to be getting these into as they are, let's get the meeting criteria sorted out, Chair. You see, now we're going back to square one if this information emerges okay, like this.
You see, Advocate, you did not help us, you see. And I don't want us to stick around one issue. We must go into the substantive issues. I don't know, you want to talk about meetings? Follow up on what? On meetings, because she was supposed to respond to a question. That's why I'm asking, is it about the meetings? I wanted a yes or a no.
Chairperson, yes. It's a follow-up on meetings,
Is it a follow-up on meetings?
And I'm the first follow-up. Okay. No, Chairperson, adding to the confusion, I'll just...
We mustn't call it confusion. Let's say fine. Because then they'll think we're easily confused.
Oh, okay. See? No, that's fine.
Yeah.
We're not easily confused.
Yeah.
I'll just take three departments or entities here, maybe FICA, SARS, NPA, and HOCS. Let me just take the four of them. And then you said we are meeting monthly, but there is a core group that has to meet every week. And I would take, you know, that these people, they have a day-to-day job that they are dealing with. So how do you marry that with the... what the job that you are trying to do as ACTT? I would think that you meet, you know, as per the, what is it, the importance and how ready you should be in what time. So I'm just asking myself, when are these people taking their time to do their everyday job where they are paid?
Yes, Professor.
My follow-up is very simple. It was about the issue of breakdown, and that was my original question. And so, Advocate Jeeba's response seemed to start breaking it down to different units deal with different things. So, as an example, there was a recent meeting between Commissioner Moyani and General Mtlebeza about the Jonas Makwakwa case, okay, and the 700,000 rand of mysterious payments into his accounts. Where will that particular matter, is it being investigated, number one, and where will it be investigated? Would that be under FICA? Would that be under Hawks? Would that be under SARS? You know, there's an example. Where would that fall into? Because that falls under the official involved in corrupt activities. That's one of the 1,000. Where will that fall into? Where will that particular matter be held, dealt with?
No, we'll come back to that question. I just want us to have this thing around meetings cleared, because I thought it was just a buy. Comrade Vincent?
You want me to talk to meetings?
You want to talk to something else?
Yes, not on meetings specifically.
Yeah, but I mean, she was actually supposed to answer a question, and then she answered something that was not asked, and then it triggered hands before she could even, you know. No, that's fine. Can you repeat yourself on the meeting?
Chairperson, what I'm saying is that the strategic meeting that takes place on a monthly basis consists of all the members of the anti-corruption task team. Bearing in mind that the mandate of the anti-corruption task team, as has been explained, if you take two words in it, it's investigations and prosecutions. Now, how do we ensure that we drive the investigations and prosecutions by meeting as prosecutors, representatives, and DPCI, and whoever from the bigger group seems to be presenting a problem? As I've said, you will have, for example, a case which is a tender fraud. Now, this case is being postponed many a times, whether it's Limpopo and all of that. So the special director of SCCU would have requested reports from various prosecutors who are prosecuting these cases in the various provinces. So now he sits with these reports and does an analysis and say this case is not going anywhere, basically. So then he has to have a meeting with General Matagata, who's not here today, or General Mnonopi and the other members that are particularly here, but from the DPCI's point of view. Then they dissect the problem. Sometimes the problem becomes the fact that we have applied for the appointment of forensic auditors. Now, in this, you know, there's bureaucracy in all of these things. So in the system, it's waiting for the signature of so-and-so or all of that. So that is what we then call operational meetings, because they are specifically looking into particular cases, as excluding the bigger meeting whereby we must now say, you know what, you are delaying us by not doing so and so. Why is it that NPA, that case we've sent it to you for a decision, is taking 5 months? Then I must answer in that meeting and say, you know the problem, General, that I don't have resources. It's not like this are not working. So that is the difference between the two meetings.
All right. Right. Let's go to the question that you were meant to answer before you brought in the issue of meetings.
Which question was I meant to answer?
Yeah. Do you take joint responsibility for conviction?
Okay.
May we get a breakdown entity within the ACTT?
Okay. We do take responsibility for conviction. It was an achievement for all of us. It starts with a better investigation and then naturally with a better prosecution. But I think that perhaps the question, the way I also understood it, is perhaps our different roles in the ACTT itself, since it is a task team. What happens in the ACTT is that it still remains the space of DPCI to be responsible for the screening of what cases must be dealt with by the task team. It is not the responsibility of any of the members of the task team, because that comes from their own mandate. The ACTT does not seek to confuse the mandate. So it still becomes the responsibility of the NPA to make a decision whether we should prosecute or not. So that is how we then break down. We go there understanding our separate mandates. But there is consultation in respect with regard to anything that any decision that we are going to take. We consult naturally, because as a prosecutor, you work with the investigating officer at the end of the day. The PCI is the Directorate for Priority Crimes Investigation. Yeah, it is HOX. Thank you, Chair.
All right. No. Your question, let's park it towards the end so that we still deal with issues emanating from their presentation. Commissioner Moyan will deal with that issue that he has raised, but a little later. Right. The issue.
The The question was specific. Of the 128 convictions, so the answer, Advocate Jiba, is that you're taking collective responsibility for those. You can't say of the 128, X amount were due to the work of SIU or X amount were due to the work of the Hawks. You're lumping them together. My whole point was, is everybody pulling their weight? And if everybody is, then we're happy. Okay, thank you.
All right, fine. The next question was about your interaction with the Auditor General, the Public Protector. Why are we having fewer charges using the PFMA and the MFMA and the CIDB? It's fine, there is a problem, but what recommendations could you then have sent to have those identified weaknesses addressed? It's one thing to identify weaknesses, but we need to plug in the gaps. And of course, the issues of the vacancies in the NPA.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Honorable Chair. The issue of the fewer charges in terms of the PFMA is explained by the fact that when we do charge based coming from the prosecution, we are mostly charging them on charges of fraud or corruption. And your charges in terms of PFMA or MFMA are more your alternative charges. So we go for the conviction on your main charges, which is fraud, because your PFMA charges is your lesser charges. And it always relates to issues of procedural issues which were not complied with. So we go for the charges of fraud and corruption. Hence, you have less convictions on PFMA.
Yeah.
Just for clarity, Chair.
And I'm looking at National Treasury.
Yeah. I'm worried with your... I hear what you're saying, sir. But I'm worried that you then inadvertently water down the most important law governing finances. Let me tell you why. The access, and I'm repeating it, the access, the accounting officer, is held responsible. What are you saying to me, sir, is that if the guy that washes the car steals the money, that's where the fraud is committed. So he's going to get charged. But the money was stolen because the accounting officer and the internal audit didn't have systems in place. We're never going to beat this thing. You can't charge... Not you can't. You can go ahead and charge the man that stole the money. But if he stole the money because Moyani didn't do what he was supposed to do, then I'm suggesting to you that you must charge Moyani as the accounting officer. So to come to Parliament and say you don't consider the PFMA because it's the alternate charge is a serious problem for SCOPA. Because our empowerment tool is the PFMA. Then we might as well throw it away as Parliament. Then we might as well throw it away as Parliament because the law enforcement agencies don't consider that to be serious. So I think you must go and reconsider. Either you haven't articulated it correctly or I haven't understood it correctly. But if what I understand is what you've said, then we need to have further discussions. Then we need to have further discussions because we might as well throw the PFM away. Because ours, Chair, as SCOPA, we really want to get down to holding managers accountable for not doing what they are supposed to do. And the only weapon that we have is the PFMA. So can you guys, and that's why, Chair, I wanted to make a proposal. But maybe let's allow them to continue. Because I want to make a proposal that is going to close all these gaps. Because it's clear, and it might not be your fault. It is clear, Chair, that we have to close the circle. And in my proposal, when we finish, maybe it'll close it. But I just wanted to respond to you.
All right.
If what you're doing is correct, then we've got a problem in South Africa.
No, in fact, I must go to National Treasury. How do you allow the Hawks to have this understanding when you're part of the ACTT? Because it's correct. It means the PFMA is actually a disciplinary code is there for internal disciplinary processes?
Well, there's a combination of things there. Firstly, I mean, these things are going to depend on a case-by-case basis, because you may find that the corruption has happened actually at the lower end level without the knowledge of an accounting officer. Would it be fair in your investigation to hold an accounting officer responsible basically for that? So it depends on how the investigation actually unfolds and who in the whole value chain is ultimately responsible basically for that. But I don't know whether I would assist the Honorable Chair on this. Maybe what we need to do is, and you may want to consider it, once we have given the list of all the cases that are before you in the form in which it is proposed, then we can have a further engagement on a case-by-case basis and say, on this case, who are the complicit parties in it? What action needs to be taken related to that? And let's chart rather a way forward maybe related to that. Many of these matters, by the way, also, while the accounting officer is responsible, you've got the political office bearer that's in charge of the department that must also take a particular kind of responsibility. And where we sit, we cannot interfere.
But what I'm trying to check is to what extent is there interaction between yourselves and, say, the Hawks when they're doing investigations? Since from where we're standing, there is no, well, as a committee, the PFMA is our Bible. That's the one that we use. That's the one that regulates everything. So if there are cases, to what extent is there sufficient interaction between yourselves and the Hawks? Because you are the custodians of the Act in terms of proper interpretation and, you know, all those kind of things.
No, directly on that question, Honourable Chair, is many of the cases that are being investigated relates to supply chain, right? And we cooperate directly with the Hawks and the SIU directly on each and every case, where we even or on many of the cases, and we give specific affidavits related to where supply chain transgressions has actually taken place. So that's the entire. I mean, we met with Andy 2-3 weeks ago related to some of the proclamations that they are now basically investigating, and they're collecting quite a bit of the information related to that. And once they've got that, we help them to think through the supply chain aspects actually of that. So that part we actually do. But the key question that Honorable Smith is asking is, once that is concluded and a charge has been laid and somebody has been found guilty, why is it that it is only the lower level, if I understand you well, and not necessarily the accounting officer? And that is the part that I say we need to think around, okay, as the right. ACTT. How do we deal with that? Because it is a genuine concern.
Okay. Slengwa? I'll come to Kikan.
No, Chair, I'm glad now that this issue of you has been clarified, because it and my concerns have now, you know, come to life tenfold, not I'd actually anticipated. Because, Chair, the issue of the PFMA and the MFMA is a problem for this particular reason. COCTA, about 2 weeks ago, department briefed COCTA committee telling us that the issue of failure to enforce or to succeed in the prosecution as far as PFMA and MFMA is concerned is that the prosecutors have a limited understanding of the PFMA and the MFMA. That's why I'd asked this question. And the response now is a heavy indictment, which actually confirms it. And I want to agree with what Ms. Honorable Smith is saying, which we need to zoom very closely at this, because we were speaking about the 109 forensic audit, you know, reports which COCTA had solicited, and some of them, the reasons given there in terms of why prosecution has not gone ahead, for me, it is a confirmation of the response that I've just received. So I think we do need to actually at some point arrive at, you know, drilling down into the challenges or the bottlenecks which are there in the PFMA which cause this particular anomaly which has been spelled out here. Thanks, Chair.
All right. Kekana.
Thanks, Chair. I think what Treasury is saying would somehow assist that is the problem that we have. Because the reason why we are raising these questions is when we have hearings, departments would indicate to us that this some of the issues that we are dealing with, let me focus on the cases. They would clearly say to us, this matter or this case is sub judice, we cannot deal with that case. And this has been referred to law enforcement agencies. Now, if we have at least that is of those cases, it would then be easy for us to follow that is where the case is. Because, to be honest, you can see from that is the questions that we are asking, is we do have information, and you seem not to be providing us with the information that we need. But if we are going to do that, I think it would somehow assist us in dealing with these issues, so that when Department A says to us, we have referred this, that is, to the law enforcement agencies, on the spot we would be in a position to say, no, this is not true. And from our side, we would also be in a position to track and follow that is some of these cases. But maybe, Chair, what we then need is let's have a time frame as to when are we going to have a list of this, because, to be honest, this is of our interest.
All right. Still on the PFMA? Okay.
Earlier on, when he started with his response, he said there are some cases that they don't find that the accounting officer is not aware of. And I wanted to get clarities on that. So then how do you get your cases? Is it from the whistleblowers, which I think that's what the colleague has asked earlier on when she started. Where, how do you get your cases? If the accounting officer won't know, then and then the question becomes then, Chairperson, after listening to what comrades are saying, on page 23, is this your wish list or is it something that you are dealing with when you said you need to have, we need to conduct workshops with regard to PFMA, MFMA, and PRECA of crucial importance, you know? Page 23, is this a wish list or is it something that you are trying to do, and what is your role as a treasurer to make sure that this is actually done? Because I think that's where you come in.
All right.
Thanks, Chair.
Just note that, Comrade Boy.
Mr. Brown, sir, you're representing National Treasury. You see, from what we are saying, we had a report last week. And you know, from what we are saying and relating to what the report says, it seems to be like two worlds, you see. And it's very surprising. I'll tell you what. Your report says abuse of bid processes. And then it talks about specification tailored to favor certain suppliers. I hope you know the report I'm talking to. Yeah. You see, why I'm concerned and why I'm glad that you are here, you see. And part, you see, it says criminal allegation against employees and suppliers not reported to law enforcement agencies. Now, you see, this is National Treasury. And this is what you are telling us last week. And you knew about the anti-corruption unit. What does that imply? And what does it mean to the whole system that you are trying to explain to us? You see, because I like what you did. You say that employees not disciplined for abusing this chain, the SCM, you see. This is what you are reporting to Parliament. You see, and you say, criminal charges not properly investigated. This is what your report says. This is National Treasury, and this is all the law agencies. They are here today with you. What does that imply? You know, practically, what it says to us, were either being misled and were being taken for a ride by National Treasury under your authority. And you know, when we met with you, I repeat, you gave us a very good impression as a person that could is hands-on and could resolve some of the problems. Now, here is your report. What does it mean? You see, is this not misleading Parliament? And is this not reflecting that we are not ready, you see, to do all? I can go on and on about your report, you see, because you, as you are saying, your way forward, lack of deterrent encourages non-compliance. But I thought that the creation of this particular ACTT would give us a sense that you have been so much involved. That's why, even as they are talking about how minutes and how this institution is run, it means that there's a problem between all of you, you see. What is it that we should believe as an institution? Just a small guide from your side.
Let me, okay.
Sorry. Yeah. You see, why I'm really worried, this is why I was looking for you. It says OCPO is ready to train investigators and prosecutors who handle SCM-related cases. This is what Vincent's concern was expressed here today. It's reflected in your report. What is it that is really happening? Is this team not helpful, or is this team not understanding the issues that are raising that are related to procurement, invoices, and all those things? Because that's where the huge, I mean, crimes are taking place, you see. That's why maybe your report doesn't reflect the truth and the state of things that are related to corruption. What is exactly going on?
Honorable Chair, if you can give me 5 to 10 minutes, with your permission.
Not 10 minutes, I don't have.
Of Okay, five. In 2010 and 11 and 12, the ACTT did a detailed diagnostic of what is wrong in the entire governance system of corruption and procurement. Out of that came a detailed report on why we need to establish the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer. We can share, actually, the report with the committee. The main thrust of the report was to say this office must focus on preventing corruption to happen. Because when you get there and it's too late, you're wasting your time. Right? So the way the office has been established was in line with the recommendations that has been made actually by the ACTT itself. So 95% of the work that the office does is to modernize supply chain, is to train supply chain management practitioners related to that, is actually to make it fairly easy for business to transact, basically, with the state when it buys, basically, things. And that is where our focus, basically, has been. Then you've got the parts where, in case something goes wrong, where do you intervene? And that is our contribution, basically, directly into the ACTT. And then we have, for example, identified, and it's, I think it's the last slide even, on or slide number 23, we say conducting workshops on the MFMA and all of that, so that we help to train prosecutors. Because in our interaction with all of the investigators, we have realized that the gap is indeed in them actually understanding supply chain as well, and how do we actually support them related to that. Now to come back to the point that Honorable Kuno has raised, let me give you an example. In the Sunday Times, there was a mention of the Department of Water Affairs. They attended that, basically being awarded there. Now let me just give you the process of how that happens. An accounting officer will rarely, and Honorable the Commissioner of SARS is here. He approves tenders. He assumes the committees would be doing their work. The bid evaluation committee, the bid adjudication committees, etc., will be actually be doing their work. Right? So when something comes to him, he just puts his hand on his heart and assume that the process has been flawed. You're going to, in all probability, find that if you were to investigate that particular tender that's in the paper relating to water affairs, that Director General may not have known anything who the beneficiaries are related to that. And that department only manages one tender. We process close to 40 to 50,000 tenders a month. That's how big actually the system is. So the system relies actually on ethical behavior and the rest, which we, even if we were to be superhumans, it will be basically difficult to really keep track on each and every one of those. That's the reason why they are in an institution. The institution must work. Internal audit in an institution must function. Forensic auditors, some institutions have got forensic auditors. Some institutions use probity officers in the system. So you've got a holistic system, and the whole system must function together in there. We as the ACTT, we can come, we can investigate at the end. We as the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer, we can put systems in place at the end. But ultimately, if other parts of the system is not working, it will be tough for us.
All right. Okay. Okay. No, that's fine. I'm sure we can discuss further some other times. But I want us to go back to your working relations with the Chapter 9 institutions, the vacancies at the NPA, access to your office. How do we make it easy for people to access your offices, especially the Hawks, because to you, cases come once they've done the investigation.
Yeah. Honorable Chair, honorable members, the access to the Hawks is as follows. There's a website where people can access. And also, in terms of reporting illicit issues, at times is by anonymous letters. And at times, a specific letter from Mr. Ntlameza, who's complaining. And in that, we're complying with Section 34 of the Corruption Act.
I think what she wanted to find out, it's if I go to a police station, is there a policeman who is called the Hawks, or where do we find you? Do you only exist at the top level? Where, how? I think that's what she was interested.
I was coming to that, Honorable Chair. At times, cases are being opened at the station, and immediately a case is registered at the police station. The station commander who's in charge there, or a detective officer who's on duty, will quickly interact with the Hawks officials in the whole of South Africa. It's what is happening.
So where
including
where,
including the provinces.
So where are the Hawks? Are they in an office in Pretoria or
Honorable Chair, they are in the provinces. In each and every provinces, we are having the provincial head of the Hawks. So it's easy if there's a case, for example, in the Eastern Cape or in Limpopo, in the Bush or else in Mpumalanga.
Bushbuck Ridge.
I know.
That's what it's called.
isn't it my problem? Yeah. It's easy, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, because there is a provincial head. It means if a case is open, automatically the station commander would say this one is falling under the mandate of the Hawks. Okay. And then they will inform the Hawks and the case will be taken.
That's fine. So you either go to the website or you write a letter or you depend on the police, because the nearest law enforcement agency to you is the police station. So you go there, you open it, and then they will then relocate it to the relevant... how do you interact with the Chapter 9 institutions, the Auditor General, the... not as the Hawks, isn't it? We're talking about the ACTT. Is there any formal, informal, occasional interaction with these institutions, or is it a case-by-case issue?
Honorable Chair, honorable members, it depends if there's a case. Normally, we don't, as ACTT, interact with the Auditor General and also with the Public Protector. But if there's a need, there's a case,
okay,
we interact.
All right. The issue of the... Okay, yes, Comrade.
Now, just a follow-up on the issue of access, in particular at the police stations. Perhaps Ms. Jiba will be in a better position to answer this one. What is required? What are the requirements of a person who's coming to open a case? Like I've made an example that it took two councillors last week 6 hours because the investigating units would be between the prosecutors at court and the police station asking if should we take this case, should we not. It took them entire 6 hours. They sitting at the police station, the police refusing to open a case because they are saying there are no prospects of successful prosecution. And I want a clear understanding. What is required for a person who's coming to open a case of corruption in order for the police to take it and in order for it to be referred to either SIU or prosecution?
Honorable Chair, I think I must answer this one. I think it was just a case by its own, that one. No police officer can refuse to open a case at the police station. And I would say if there are such instances, that needs to be reported immediately. Even now when I'm here, if during break you can approach me, Honorable, so that you give me the example so that we take steps.
Okay. All right. Ross?
Thank you, Chair. I'd just like to make a comment with regards to the importance of Treasury, perhaps in addressing the scourge of corruption. And it seems...
There was a question they were responding to around the Public Protector and the issues of access. If it is something else, just hold it.
Okay.
When we're done with this set of questions that have been asked, then we'll allow comrades to ask whatever other question that might be outstanding. You wanted to make a follow-up on... Yes, Hlengwa?
Sure, thanks. No, the basis really of the committee scope, we, this side, rely on the Auditor General's findings. And that's why I asked the extent to which there's an interaction. Because I said they are the first ones to kick the door for them to pick up the shortcomings and the fault lines. And so I want to register a concern and maybe ask the ACTT to look at its interactions, because if it's ad hoc and case by case and not institutionalized, then already you've got a loophole in the system. Because the findings of the Auditor General, by and large, are accepted by South Africans to be authentic and to be reliable. And they are the ones interacting with these departments and entities almost all the time. And I mean, we have successfully in this committee been able to achieve a lot because on the basis of the work that the AG has done. So I'm just registering that concern to your team. Maybe I can understand the issue of a public protector because that's maybe an investigative arm and sorts of other things. But this particular one, the enforcing the PFMA, and already seeing that there's shortcomings there, not going to tap into an already existing resource which the state has, I must say, Chair, I'm very, very worried. So I would say maybe as part of its operations, look at it, but I can most certainly, Chair, vouch. But maybe the flip side would be to, why was such a institution kept at arm's length, and why a need for an ad hoc basis or operational model between them? I'm just failing to understand, Chair, why Auditor General is not part and parcel of these operations. to consult him on what? I mean, these audits are yearly, and they are the ones who are dealing with individuals. We've got a target of 1,000 people here and so on. These are the people at the coal face of picking up the challenges that are there.
Comrade Kuno.
Thanks, Chair. Just a small question to advocate, your advocate, ne? I don't want to make a mistake with titles. With the, you said earlier on, you know, when you were answering questions that there's a red tape and it takes time for things to be dealt with. So I'm just thinking out loud that after a case has been reported to a police station, the worst case scenario is that it can take up to 3 years before it comes to your attention.
Comrade Boy, you can respond to that as well.
No, I wanted to say, Chairperson, as you think going towards working out what next after this, that it in the work of this collective and the concerns that we are expressing, you would know that this would always rely, because you see, I'll tell you now, in the report of the procurement, I have seen some suggestions of how can we as an institution assist them to improve on their work. So if they can, within that responsibility, make us aware in a very honest way, because we are the lawmakers, no other person can be able to write the law better than us. You see, then you come across and explain to us that why is it that we're not able to grapple with this particular issue called corruption, you see. Because one of the things that comes out of your report, Kenny, is the fact that the way it's affecting the small business, it puts a lot of pressure outside here for people to be able, because other people don't earn their bread, you see. They earn their bread by the business they do with the state, you see. And if there's all this little bit of blockages, it affects all of us. So give us the suggestions and give us the thinkings, so that wherever, I mean, as we engage as parliamentarians, we come to solutions of how do we assist you to build your capacity, because it is a big challenge, but we need to deal with it.
All right. Okay. The length of time it takes from reporting a case to you taking a decision on whether to prosecute or not, and also talk to the issue of the vacancies, I think that you spoke to earlier.
Thank you very much, Chair. I will speak to the issue of the vacancies, and I've got a Advocate Governor at the back who will speak to the length of time, because they are more at an operational level. With regard to the issue of vacancies, what we have done now is not like we're sitting and doing nothing. We've been to Treasury to request the filling of certain vacancies, but we also understand, because they did tell us that there isn't money, and then, you know, there are challenges.
Of course, money is lost,
yes.
It's lost through corruption. Yes. So if you fight it successfully, then we'll have more money.
So what we are doing now, Chair, we've done an analysis, so we're going to be trying to be moving resources from the general prosecutions. The general prosecutions consist of those cases that we would call housebreaking and assaults and thefts and malicious injury and all of that. We're trying to take senior prosecutors who are there to place them into the specialized units that is now to be able to prosecute in the commercial crime environment. And we're taking the very, very young prosecutors from school, which is very risky on its own, to the lower courts, to the district courts, while the situation is still like this. But also, at least the minister has then said that we must then submit a list of the critical vacancies that we cannot exist without.
So that, those are the processes that we are actually putting in place.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. Ma'am?
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. I think I must start by saying first and foremost that one of the things we must accept when you're dealing with corruption is and offences involving fraud and commercial crime in general, that these matters tend to be a lot more complex than your average cases that would come through. So as a result, based on the complexity of the matters, it would obviously take a lot more time. In general, with the SECU, with the commercial work that we deal with, especially because of the PGI methodology, that's prosecution guided investigations, where we work as a team with the investigating officer. You have a prosecutor and an investigating officer that's appointed as soon as the matters are reported through to the police and then referred through to the NPA. That you will find that there is a much quicker turnaround time in terms of the investigations. Having said that, however, one must respect that the nature of these offences, because you require forensic reports, because you require extensive investigations, could take anything from 2 years to 3 years before it would see the inside of a courtroom. One must then understand that once the investigation aspect is finalized, it then needs to go into the court process. Once it gets into court, you must understand that these matters are generally litigated upon extensively by the accused persons, trying to avoid every or dealing with the trials first and foremost, or going into jail where this is concerned. Often we have asset forfeiture that becomes involved, where we try and seize the assets as well, so you also have litigation where that is concerned. They take any number of pre-trial issues to try and delay the prosecution processes, trying to delay the trial. So you could find that with a matter of this nature, it is not unreasonable to see the trial eventually be finalized after 5 years. That has been, and I, you know, as much as we want to have a quicker turnaround time, some of the measures that we put in place is such as ACTT, to have the dedicated investigators and prosecutors to try and deal with these cases to the exclusion of everything else, to shorten the turnaround time of the investigations. We try to see that these matters are placed on the SCCU or the commercial crime court's roles. We have to motivate for the creation of dedicated courts to deal with corruption, which you've heard of before. Those timelines, as bad as it sounds, are not unusual. If you compare the turnaround times in general where you're dealing with corruption matters and commercial crime matters internationally.
All right. Then there was the case of the issue of the statistics, the numbers and the percentages. 28% success rate, 36% finalized SIU, out of 13, 1 completed, out of 6, 2, out of 6, 3. Was this the correct arithmetic around your percentage of success rate and your percentage of finalization of cases, or is it are they all impacted by what she has just explained to us, depending on the complexity of the case, which, or the absence of these dedicated courts, which I think in the past you had specialized courts which environmental courts, which I think were done away with for whatever reason, God knows why we don't have this dedicated courts, so that you're able to have, I think as you were saying, prosecutors who are focusing solely on this kind of cases.
Advocate Chiba will start, Honourable Chair.
Right.
Thank you very much, Chair. The way I understood the question, there was an issue about the figures that were not talking together. I can't remember which Honourable Member raised that question, but there was also an issue about the figures that were contained in another slide, and there were others which were different to the other slide. Is it
right?
That's the question. Okay. In slide number 11, where we speak about the total number of 128 persons that have been convicted since the inception of the Act, the difference between that slide and the other slide which you referred to, which I think consists of, is it 399? Which consists of 399, is that the criteria is, those are two separate type of cases, if I can put it like that. In this slide of 128 persons, we're speaking about where the persons that have been convicted, it's where the amount involved is 5 million or more. That's that slide. And in the other slide, we're not looking into the amount involved. It simply refers to corrupt government officials, like for example where people were taking bribes, and so that is basically the difference. Yes.
Honorable Chair, SIU in terms of the statistics and percentage.
Okay. Before the SIU, sorry, yes. Chair, before the SIU, on that very slide 10, it talks about 189 cases and 68 completed. That was separate to the SIU's matter. On slide number 10.
Thank you, Chair. The what we speak about there is the remember in the others we don't get convictions essentially, so we're speaking about the cases that generally we have dealt with, not necessarily the because in each and every case, for example, let's say in one case you have five persons, so the delivery agreement wants us to report on the convictions per se, not on the cases. So this was just to give an indication that currently in our court rolls now we have 44 cases. So those 44 cases, it's possible that the 44 cases in a docket consist of 10 persons. So that is the essence of the slide.
No, I don't
know. Yeah, I don't know that we're talking the same language.
I don't understand. Just repeat.
Let me advocate you, but just so that you understand. On slide number 10, the first bullet point, you say, since inception, the total number of cases dealt with is 189. 189.
Oh, okay.
Your next bullet point, the number of finalized cases is 68. So that makes me understand, of the 189 that you've dealt with, you have finalized 68. Whether it was thrown out of court, it doesn't matter. But what it says to me is that you've only gone through 36% of your workload. That was the question, Chair. I was asking the question, why are we only going to 36% up? Whether they were convicted, withdrawn, it doesn't matter. But I would have expected that of the 189 since inception, it should be higher than that. Unless what you are saying, ma'am, is a direct impact on this, that the reason we're only doing 38% since inception is because people are successfully keeping them off, then say that to us, so that we are aware that it means that if I've got money or if I've got contacts, I could successfully stay out of court forever. That's what this thing says to me. And you must say that so that we understand it as lawmakers, because as Nyame Boy said, somebody steals a loaf of bread because his child is hungry. Namhlanje he gets locked up. Today he gets locked up for stealing a loaf of bread. So we're saying justice is not equal because those with money and those that and those that are implicated in financial misconduct are better off than those that are stealing a loaf of bread. Say that to us so that we are able in our report to do it. I think that was the essence of the question, ma'am. Why is it that only 36% since 2012? And if it is that, then we can accept it. But at least we have an understanding of what the real challenges are in South Africa.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. Now I do understand your question. It's exactly the challenge that we're facing. If you heard what Advocate Govender was saying, he's saying that these cases are highly litigated. You know, where there are cases, you'll be surprised. When I was still a prosecutor myself in the Office for Serious Economic Offences, those cases are still on the roll today. I'm serious. That is how much these cases, they can take anything more than 10 years. You go to court, and then we defend, the other party wins, then the other party appeals, so we have also issues of requests for further particulars and better particulars. Then we litigate on whether these particulars that we have submitted as a state are sufficient enough to enable this person to plead. Then there are rights that are contained in the Constitution, the rights to a fair trial, the rights to legal representation. Then the accused persons, they are very clever. Then they hire and fire attorneys. So we sit in this, and I'm not saying that we are particularly perfect as the law enforcement agencies, but this is the bulk of our problem, which is why the Chief Justice in 2013 or 2014 established a structure which is called the National Efficiency and Effective Committee, which consists of the judges and magistrates and the members of the bar, so that we can start addressing and holding each other accountable, so that they can hold the judges and hold the magistrates accountable with regard to cases. In the Western Cape alone, Honorable Chair, is that we've been looking for a court. Advocate Governor will tell you she's as frustrated as anything, because every time she comes to submit a report to me, then I say, you're not performing. How is it possible that we're sitting with this kind of backlog of cases? One of the days we'll bring you what we mean when we say a backlog of cases. It's cases that have been there, but they just don't have a space to be even litigated upon in court, because the roles are packed. Which is why we're crying for the establishment of dedicated courts, because the only dedicated courts that we have are dedicated courts which were established in 1999. I mean, that was a long time ago. We're supposed to have other dedicated courts by now. Yes, thank you.
All right. Okay. SIU?
Thanks, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I'd like to just indicate that the presentation that we sent was also based on the invitation that SIU received to present to this committee on the cases that we are investigating and their status. We have sought to give this committee just the summary and the detail of where we are and on the status of those cases. Members would have seen both those presentations. So specifically on the slide that the Honorable Member referred to, which is the slide number 7, which indicates the proclamations received versus proclamations completed. Perhaps it's worth noting on the methodology which we employ in terms of conducting the investigations vis-a-vis where we completed and sent the report to the President. In the process of the investigation, wherever we pick up any criminal infraction or any disciplinary process that we should recommend to the state institution, we do so. We do not wait until the end of the investigation and therefore complete the report to the President. We do, however, indicate in the report those matters that we have already indicated or referred to the State Department. I'll demonstrate that to you, Chair and Honourable Members. So that slide necessarily indicate that in that financial year 14-15, we would have received 13, and my information is that in that financial year, the 9 proclamations were received in the last part of the financial year, in which case investigations would have only started then. And if you look, Chair, in our presentations or in our reports, you'd really observe that the average time that it takes, and I'm saying average guardedly, but the average investigation that you would notice is almost, you know, hovering around, you know, between 1 to 3 years, 4 years, and so on. But you would find that there are those other investigations that dates back to like 2009 and so on. And we have now indicated to ourselves that we need to do something around turnaround times. That is why you would see the slide. In fact, it's slide number 3 in that presentation, where we indicate to the committee that we have started interrogating ourselves in terms of how do we improve on turnaround times of investigations generally. So the point I was making, Chair, we could easily have indicated in that picture, perhaps it's something that we should, because one investigation would have numerous focus areas, in which case when we reach, call it a milestone in terms of completing evidence on criminal matter, we do refer to NPA in this regard, and some of those matters find their way into ACTT. When we find that there's an opportunity to do a civil recovery, which is one of the examples which were mentioned, we do indicate that to the state institution. Since 2012, SIU has got the legal authority to conduct civil litigation in its own name on behalf of state institutions, and it's something that we do, and we do rigorously. You would see in the stats, in the cases that we have presented to you. So, Chair, if I can just demonstrate.
No. I think you have already dealt with the question of 13 versus 1.
Yes.
That was the fundamental question.
I wanted to just, with your permission, Chair, 2 minutes, to say in that financial year, if you look at page 12 to 15 of the same presentation, Chair, you would find that there's proclamations issued in 2014. Proclamation 4, 5, 6, 7 on page 12. On page 13, 4, there's another 2 proclamations. So there's almost about 5 of the proclamations which were issued in 2014. And you would see that the status is that the final presidential report is being prepared. But if you look into the detailed presentation that we've given you, is that on the same proclamations, whilst we are still preparing the final report to the President, there's been quite a number of criminal matters that we have referred. There's been a number of disciplinary matters that we have referred to the state institutions. We have referred, we have even taken civil litigations where some of the contracts have been cancelled by the High Courts. So there are outcomes in the process. So we could, as I say, on the next occasion, even depict those outcomes whilst we are preparing for the final reports. So, Chair, that was responding specifically to the stats one.
All right. Okay. No, that's fine. Brother, sir, he has stepped out. He had raised a question that I had said should be. You should talk to it later. And you see, I've now even forgotten the question, except that Commissioner Moyane had his hand up for that question. Now, I'm not sure whether we should park that question, because I can't even remember it. I know it was about the Deputy National Commissioner, but I can't formulate it properly.
Chairperson, if I can just come in there, it was with regards to whether the Hawks have the Jacob Makwakwa docket and who laid the complaint, and we were and in terms of how it was structured, in terms of an operational matter, and which agencies, law enforcement agencies, are currently working with us, and we were expecting perhaps SARS just to give us an indication who is dealing with this.
Did you get that, Commissioner Moyan?
Thanks, Chair, with your permission. The question essentially emanating from the Honourable Member was that the Commissioner and the Lieutenant General Ntlemeza had met. That was the essence, to discuss the case of Mr. Jonas Makwakwa. The answer that I want to give to the committee is that it is very dangerous to work on a media information that which is not true. I and the General have not met on this matter. So it's a matter this SARS has to deal with and present to the authorities. I'm saying this respectfully, Chair, because if we are to use the media as a form of information to the public in the manner that it is, it gives a wrong impression of dealing underhand activities with respect of serious nature as it is presented. I want to put it here that I don't and I have not met the General to present this matter. It's a process on its own that takes its roots within the organization, need to be done in the process that follows the laws of this country. Thanks, Chair.
Yeah, no. I think, Commissioner, just take it in good faith. We read newspapers and we have lots of journalists here. And if we read certain things, we sometimes believe them or we doubt them. Now, with the advantage of your presence, you could then use this opportunity to clarify it, which is what you have done. So I take it in that spirit. And when a question is raised, it must always be an opportunity to put the correct facts on the table. Right. I hope it's really small. Yes, comrade.
SIU. So from your explanation, you do have a time frame that you're looking at when you're dealing with the problems that comes before you or investigations. So the only problem is when you have to refer them to NPA or ACTT. That's when the delays are. But according to you, what will be an ideal time, you know, of saying, you know, if we come together as this team and saying we have to make sure that investigations are made on time and we have to help each other, because we're not here to compete. We're here to make sure that at the end of the day, there's no corruption in South Africa. We curb corruption that we're talking about. And we cannot forever have an unending cases. Like I see some of the cases that there are cases that you have finished, but there are cases that are still pending or other cases that you have referred to NPA. So the question is that your timelines, the reasonable ones, what are they exactly?
All right, that's fine. I want us to, and I'm looking at Commissioner Moyan. But without coming to you, I just want, as a last, just to check with you. How do you prioritize cases beyond what you have said? What you have presented here. I mean, at a practical level, I'm not at an operational level. you have 3, 4, 5, 6 cases, which how do you say, I want this first, I don't want this? Is it a decision that you take at your level, or is it a decision that you refer to the DGs? Is it a decision that gets referred to the politicians? That is, you refer upwards, but is there also a downward referral in terms of, we think prioritize this, or we think don't prioritize this? How do you, at that practical level, whether it is investigation or prosecution,